20 minutes past five. So the World Cup, of course, is a battle of countries, football teams, all of them aspiring to the prize of being the best team on the planet. But it's also a place in which there's massive contestation around sporting goods. What kit is the winning team wearing? What boots, as we heard so interestingly and eloquently earlier, are the top players wearing? And how does that translate into future sales? We thought we'd have a chat about that, and welcome to 702 Drive, Professor Michael Goldman. He's in the sports management program at the University of San Francisco, and I think many of you would know him as well for the work he continues to do at the Gordon Institute of Business Science. Prof. Goldman, welcome, and thanks very much for your time. Does a World Cup winning team, if they wear your brand, translate into sales? What do the numbers tell us? Good afternoon.
Afternoon, John. Great to chat with you again. Certainly we have seen evidence over the last few years and tournaments that a World Cup winning team and their apparel sponsors and other sponsors do get an uplift from those diehard fans who really love their team, love their country, love their flag, love the outfit, love the shirt, and are willing to spend to express that fandom and thereby support the brands and the teams that support the country or the team that they love and support. So yeah, we talk about the image transfer effect, that relationship between the brand of the sponsor, the brand of the team or country or national team that's playing, and the fan. And that relationship can be really, really strong. And winning helps. Winning certainly allows someone to want to publicly express the way in which they see themselves as part of that team.
Yeah, it's really interesting. What about then moving away from teams? And we will come back to it, by the way. But we just heard earlier, players wearing Nike, 51% of the footballers out there. Adidas, 35%. Puma, 12.5%. A similar effect in regard to boots worn by favorite players, even if that player's team doesn't happen to do particularly well in the tournament.
Yeah, there's certainly a disconnect between the performances of the national teams in the World Cup and then, of course, the performances of these heroes on the field all year round. And so if you think about the names that kind of roll off the tongue, as you mentioned, they are more famous often for what they do during Premier League or La Liga or, within country or European soccer competitions than what happens at the World Cup. And we famously know that there are some of these wonderful soccer players who don't perform necessarily as well at the World Cup, and their country team doesn't do as well. For the Nikes of the world, as mentioned before, who do sponsor the majority of superstar athletes, they're looking for a constant month-by-month, game-by-game during the league performance,
right,
and the brand associated with that in order to drive those sales. And although the World Cup generates a lot of noise and excitement, and they will spend into that to make sure that everyone knows, right, who Nike sponsors. But the performance of the national team is less important for those individual sponsors of the athletes.
So let's look at some numbers. Nike has 13 teams at the World Cup. Adidas has 7. Puma has 6. And then there are small companies who each have a country. Kappa, Marathon, New Balance, Hummel, who sponsor the Danes, a company called One All, which I must admit I don't know, who are sponsors of Cameroon, and Majid, again, a lesser known sports brand in terms that is, I think, sponsored Iran. The question that I wonder about is this: once all that replica gear has been sold, and Nike so far have 3 teams in the last 16, Puma have 1, so we still wait to see. Is there ongoing sales of football kit as a key part of revenue stream, or does it peak with major tournaments? I'm talking about national teams now.
Yeah, national team kit would peak when the national team is playing.
Right.
And so certainly for those teams you mentioned, for the brands you mentioned, this month-long period now is critical. Of course, a number of these teams, well, all of these teams are playing in the group stages, as you know. And you would have seen a lot of focus at retail, point of sale, online social media campaigns, offline campaigns to make a huge noise running into the World Cup. I mean, we always know what the great Nike campaigns will be a week or two into the World Cup, and they're pushing shirt sales for those group stages. Yes, if their teams continue, then you know they'll continue to drive that marketing message into the end of the World Cup. But it's those group stages when everyone is so engaged in these three critical games that they drive a lot of those sales, especially for some of the shirts that are you know judged by most fans to be more beautiful, more interesting. Interesting new designs. We think about the Nigerian shirt, for example. You know, these shirts that get a lot of attention in the past through designs, now perhaps through the protests associated with some of those shirt designs. And that attracts attention, and that gets people who support those countries to go out there and buy this year's shirt, because you don't want to be seen at the pub wearing last World Cup year's shirt. So you want to be seen wearing this year's shirt. And certainly those are the sales that they drive. The long tail is not so long. After the World Cup, there are some sales, but then it you know, you'll see those discounts come in and they'll want to move that stock. Of course, when countries play each other, as we know, in other events, in other tournaments, in other one-off events, then there's some additional opportunities as well.
So if it was a points table, and Nike obviously has the advantage of playing, having so many more teams, but at the moment Nike's top of the table, their teams have scored 52 World Cup points, Puma second with 18 and Adidas with 16, which is completely irrelevant to anything, but I just thought I'd share that with you. But Prof, let's come back to this and ask you this. The player part of the bargain around boots, and indeed the team negotiation, what's the kind of bump in the asking price on a new contract, would you reckon, if either your country wins the World Cup or you have a stellar performance, whether you end up with a medal or not?
The bump in terms of a personal sponsorship deal for that
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So when Nike's sitting down with Kylian Mbappe, for example, are they of France or Marcus Rashford of England, are they going to sit down and look at a number of years' performance? Are they going to look at how many boots sell because of our association with your name? Or can you and your agent say, hey, excuse me, take a look at the color of my medal, it's gold?
I'm afraid to say it's the middle option. It really is the relationship between performance, reach, fandom, and sales.
Yeah.
And so, yes, winning the World Cup or you know performing really well on the field is great. It's great because it creates more buzz. It gets you know, people looking at the athlete. It gets people building a relationship, a positive relationship with that athlete. So that is good. But the actual performance on the field is less important for sales.
Right.
It's really about the brand of that athlete. So how does that athlete engage on social media? What are the campaigns we can build around that athlete? To what extent does that athlete have authentic fans that are willing to spend money to demonstrate to others that they support that player? So your country winning the World Cup, that's great. You got more TV time. You may have scored a goal. We've got an excellent 30-second clip that we can send around. But actually, it's where do you play your league games? What's your ongoing brand performance? What success have you had as a personal brand moving product over the last few years? What does that say about the likelihood of you doing that in the future? So yes, athletic performance can be helpful, but when it is attached to brand performance, to the ability of an athlete to be an influencer. Because at the end of the day, the reason these athletes and teams and sport events get sponsored is because they have an ability to influence other people, what they think, feel, and do. And so similarly, if Nike feels that one of those athletes has the ability over the next 12 to 18 months to change the way people think about something,
right,
feel about something, and then go out and open their wallets and spend money on it, then yes, I'm willing to spend into it. The fact, you know, how many goals they scored or how exactly their team did is slightly less important.
Wow. Okay. Michael Goldman, fascinating stuff, joining us from the University of San Francisco. He's an associate professor in sports management there, also part of the faculty at the Gordon Institute of Business Science. So if France win another World Cup, Kylian Mbappe can say, I have two World Cup medals. And in the contract negotiations, the agent for Cristiano Ronaldo could say, no medals, but 493.5 million Instagram followers. It's a funny old world, 29 minutes past five.